The Brad Sessmatt Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network Studios.
Thanks for being with us. Good Tuesday. Jude LaCava is going to jump on board with us at 10:20. I was with Jude the other night. Talk about two old farts hanging around, just kicking it. We were over at the Rising FC match, and we had a great time. Hung out there, taking pictures and meeting people. And as I've said here through the years, as soccer continues to grow, and with the MLS looking at coming here this July to meet with Rising FC's ownership and making a decision in December, guys like Jude, guys like Bruce Cooper, and all the other sports guys on TV, as well as on the print side, on the radio side, on the digital side, we all have to band together to get the MLS here. I am cheerleading on this. This is not about soccer as much as it's about getting another pro sports franchise here. I want to have five. I like having two NASCAR races. I like having the PGA come here. I like being the busiest sports market in America that nobody knows about because we just have our own little slice of heaven out here. So Jude and I hung out together the other night. We'll talk about Rising, what he would do if he had the number one overall pick with the Suns. He and I are very like-minded about Robert Sarver and the train wreck that is the Suns and why the Diamondbacks can't seem to win a game. Last night, we were out doing it. We did an event last night. We're going to start doing more events, I think, as we unfold Sports 360 AZ. I say unfold, we are in year number four of doing Sports 360 AZ. We started as Pros to Preps. We folded that up and said, let's rebrand ourselves, and we did. And so part of what I've seen that is going on in the Valley, and actually I think a trend across the country, is most of you would like to have more local stuff. It doesn't mean sitting here breaking down the Cardinals who are not at OTAs, which you can go get anywhere. It doesn't mean sitting here breaking down the Suns against the Hawks on a Monday night. It means just being out in the community. And it means if it's the community colleges that are under siege for football, that we talk about it here on this show. If it means the Suns are nincompoops, we talk about it on this show. If it means that there's something high school related, let's go out and do something high school related in the community. So I was very pleased last night. We had six high school coaches. Eric has some pictures from last night where we were out at Valle Luna. And there's Sean Aguano, the head coach at Chandler, and Haley on the left, Jordan on the right, doing our thing out there last night. Great crowd that came out. And they just wanted to hear high school football coaches, now that spring football is done, to talk about their programs. And it's Bobby Newcomb over there at Castile. Bobby's a great story. Eric, man, you look dashing and dapper last night. I look like a slob. That's why I'm not in these pictures.
Yeah, thank you so much for telling me not to overdress, which clearly I did.
You did.
I was the only one that looked halfway formal.
You look professional.
No, I don't want.
I'm not professional.
I didn't know that I was not supposed to look professional, but clearly I was the most overdressed of the group.
It's fun though, huh?
It was fun.
So, because here's the thing, it spills over into college. I don't know on your end. We had two separate stations. Jason Jewell and I were talking about spring ball with the coaches and then recruiting and why Arizona State and Arizona cannot seem to figure it out how to keep kids here. And it was very interesting to get coaches. The Chandler School District is one of the top, if not the top district when it comes to football in the state.
No, there's no debate. It is the best.
It is the best, you think?
Sure. It's not even close, actually.
Really?
Sure.
You're saying the schools in the Paradise Valley School District or Mesa School District don't measure up?
They don't.
Okay. As long as you said it.
I mean, if you look at the...
Steve Hogan, line one, Mesa Community of Mesa Schools.
I mean, you had two teams from the same region playing for the 6A title last
Harry
year.
Chandler, yeah.
So that's pretty telling.
Jason sits down last night, and Coach Zadebski, the new coach at Hamilton, was not there. He's back moving from Michigan. And Jason, he immediately goes to the... So let's go right into the story of the 800-pound elephant in the room about the hazing scandal. I'm like, okay, Jason, let's go for it. Take the gloves off. It was great. But we had fun last night. It was fun. The downside was in front of me on this stage, we had two different broadcast positions last night. On the stage, there was this giant monitor. And the monitor had the Diamondbacks game on it. So I'll get to that in a minute. Our opening comments brought to you by Sagicor Now. Guys, you have to protect what matters most. Ladies, you have to protect what matters most. Audience, you have to protect what matters most. Okay, what does matter most to you? And it's your family, isn't it? Do you have life insurance? If you thought about life insurance, just log on, get your free quote online. No waiting, no hassle. You can just go to Sagicor now and get that done. Think about what matters most. Protect it at Sagicor now. So I'm sitting there last night interviewing these coaches, and I'm looking up at the screen, and Greinke's on the mound, and they're already down 2-1 when we started. It was like 5, I don't know, the show started like at 5:30 for us last night. And then I look up, and it's 3-1, and once again, the downside with the Diamondbacks is they're just not scoring any runs at all. They're not very entertaining to watch. If you went through their starting lineup last night, their batting averages, I should just pull that up and read off to you their batting averages. They're not good. You know, they're in the 220s, in the high 100s, in the, you know, there's nobody really consistently that's in the 300 range on this team right now. And that's because of injury, and guys are just struggling and scuffling. So Greinke goes 6. He strikes out 9, but he gives up 3 home runs. The Diamondbacks are in a really interesting spot because today they're out of first place for the first time, and I want to say since the start of the season. I'm not going to sit here and go through the exact dates or moments with it. I only do that with the Suns and how many days it's been since they've had a playoff game. So, but it's very disappointing to see that a team has gone into such a free fall, losing 5 in a row or losing 6 of 8. When it starts to get into double digits, losing 11 of 12, and Greinke is the one that lost last night, well, now this could be 14 of 15 very easily. Matt Cook, who I was raving about 3 weeks ago, has suddenly been figured out. And he's throwing tonight against the Brewers. But they're losing these games 4-2. You know, Greinke giving up 3 runs on 3 home runs, that is a downside. It's still a winnable game. I don't like the fact that the 30-million-plus pitcher is the one that is giving up the 3 home runs. I'm not excusing that away. But the facts are this team has scored 24 runs in the last 12 games. 24 runs in 12 games equals snoozeville. It does. And that's unacceptable. And it's the thing in baseball. You cannot fire the players. You're not going to fire the manager. There's no one that's going to be fired here. It's just collectively this team has gone into an absolute slumber. And they're playing some teams that are good. I get it. You know, the Mets got healthy on the Diamondbacks, but they played Washington before that. Milwaukee's in first place in their division. So they're hitting a part in their schedule that is difficult. It's not like all these teams are just pushovers. And so when they come off of this road trip, or actually after this series in Milwaukee, they end up going to Oakland this weekend. And I think their schedule starts smoothing out a little bit. I think they run into the stretch where they're playing some teams that are somewhat the bottom feeders. And so we'll get into that a little bit later. Actually, I can do that right now. They have the Reds here next week. They have Cincinnati here for 3. Our buddy Tom Brenneman's going to be in town, Eric. They have the Reds. They have the Marlins. So they have 6 games against 2 teams that just aren't good next week. So you start to look ahead in the schedule and say, okay, what's going to happen here the next 2 games in Milwaukee? They go to Oakland. Bomell's team's okay. But then they come home with 6 that you should win 5 of 6 at home against that group of teams. They go to San Francisco for 3 and at Colorado. So Colorado's past them. Colorado's playing really well. Figure this thing out in about the next 10 days. Get out of this slumber in about the next 10 days. Turn this around to where you're winning 7 of 10, not losing 11 of 12. I'm not sitting here today panic button pushing, as some people are, saying they're never going to pull out of this. That's the beauty of 162 games. If they want to cut the schedule back to 150, I'm fine with that. But the more that you parse it back, the less true result you have for baseball and teams. You can't cut this down to 100 games because, oh, the season's too long, it's too boring. No, that's what makes it so great. We do this show 4 days a week live. If 3 of the 4 days we stink, and some of you would say we do, but if we did, we wouldn't be doing this for 7 years. We're still here doing what we're doing. The Diamondbacks, it's the same sort of analogy. They're not going to stink forever. They're going to pull themselves out of this. I can't believe that I'd be sitting here in mid-June saying they've lost 27 of 29. That's not happening. So it's just the way the schedule has played out for them. And I do think if you watch them play, And we're almost now to Memorial Day weekend, which is one of the benchmarks for knowing how the season goes. Jake Lamb has yet to really do anything this season because he's been hurt. So I don't know if Jake Lamb is the long-term solution over there. I think if you look at what's gone on over at third base, it hasn't been a total train wreck. It hasn't been a travesty, but you would think Jake Lamb is the guy. Unfortunately, he's not been out there. Those of you that want to beat up on A.J. Pollock because he's hurt, this wasn't A.J. Pollock just running and all of a sudden getting shot with an arrow. This was him laying out and he gets hurt. Those of you who want to bang away on Archie Bradley because suddenly he's gotten touched up some, that's going to happen over the course of 162 games. I am not one to sit here and panic. When a team goes 8 years without going to the playoffs, then I am going to bring out the sledgehammer, okay? I'm not going to tolerate the, well, this was our plan all along, and have people intimate, well, we should have expected this. No, let's not excuse make for the Suns. What's going on with the Diamondbacks right now is just part of a long season. The NBA playoffs, and we've got Jude here in a couple minutes, so I'll make this short and circle back on it. Let me just say this. The impact of the three-point shot in the NBA playoffs, in particular Houston and Golden State. Houston shot 3,473-pointers this season. That's a league record. In fact, in the last 2 years, the league record has been set in three-point attempts. So is this playoff series between Golden State and Houston, has this really been good basketball? You look over on the other side, the average margin of victory in the Golden State-Houston series has been 25 points. They've been blowouts. So last night, LeBron scores 44. LeBron scores 44, and I don't get to it till, like, I don't know, 4 minutes into the opening monologue. What does that mean? It means maybe I'm like most everybody else who's just come to accept that he's going to get 40, which would be a major, major accomplishment before the pre-internet era, before the pre-social media era. The guy scored 44 last night. It's the seventh time in his career he's put up 44 or more on the Celtics on one team. And we've just come to accept that, yeah, LeBron's going to go score his 40. This is not Carmelo Anthony trying to get 40 on 12 of 32 shooting and 15 free throws like Carmelo used to do. And people, I'm like, Carmelo is not all that. LeBron's a different guy. So that series is tied up at two, but we finally had a close game last night. Cleveland ends up winning by nine. The Western Conference and Eastern Conference Finals haven't really lived up to the expectation level from my view. So we'll go to that a little bit later. Also later in the show, the Jerry Colangelo basketball classic, the underlying tones of that came out from yesterday. A 7'4" player center commits to a Pac-12 school. This is not good news for the U of A or ASU. And what are we to make of these guys not going to OTAs in the NFL and the Super Bowl coming here? So we have some NFL to get to as well. But up next, we'll have Fox 10 sports director, good friend Jude LaCava. That is on the other side. We'll wrap about things going on around the valley and across our great state. I'm Brad Sussmat. So the other night, I am in the parking lot at Tempe Marketplace, and I'm waiting for the great Jude LaCava. You're going to hear from here in a second. Fox 10 sports director, good friend. And gosh, you and I have known each other for like 30 years now. So I'm in the parking lot at a BevMo. Of course, it's a BevMo. And in comes Jude, and he and I are like unshaven. We're both ball cap dudes. We look like a couple of vagrants, or I don't know what movie you can fill in the bucket list. I don't know. Both of us are dying. I guess we all are. But we end up going over to Rising together, and we walk in there. And I've been talking about Phoenix Rising for a long time on the show and soccer, and Jude's all in. But Jude's got to do NFL commitments, and you guys are adding shows, right? Like, you're going to be on the air a little bit more?
Yes, we are.
Yeah, yeah. How much more are you going to be on the air, Jude?
That's a great question. I mean, I can't say that it's not going to be less, that's for sure. I think that with expansion coming, and that means 4 to 6:30. Channel 10, and then also, of course, some newscasts on Channel 45, and then we'll go to later in the evening till 11. So, you know, certainly when it's a big sports day, let's say it's NBA draft day, you know, we'll be up front with some interesting information. But, you know, this is the way the business is changing from a standpoint of growing horizontally as digital has a bigger impact. But,
right.
You know, we'll do the best we can under the circumstances. And, you know, it was a neat Saturday night. I mean, other than you and I, you know, getting checked out for loitering in the parking lot,
pretty much,
it was a good time.
Who was the guy that took a leak out in the parking lot earlier this year? That wasn't us.
I think he was from another network.
Yeah, that wasn't us. So on this TV thing, before I get over to this, you're going to be on the air, what,
sure.
10 times a night, 8 times a night?
It certainly could be, you know, with a 4 o'clock, you know, like start a training camp, NBA draft day, big sports story, stadium issues. You know, look, sports is news in this town, as you know. It's not just a ball game or a draft pick. It's stadium issues. It's injury issues. It's CTE. There's a lot that goes on. And, you know, I will say this. The one thing that's a positive is Fox's commitment now to Thursday Night Football. It's getting a little crazy there, too. If you realize yesterday, Fox is now purchasing WWE for Friday nights.
He's going to be a ring announcer. It's coming. You're going to be a ring announcer.
Yeah, man. You know, Mean Gene is back, so, you know, we'll see how that goes. But, you know, it isn't – I think that here's the positive.
All right.
Local sports is becoming more relevant than ever before from the standpoint of people want to watch these events live. They don't want to DVR it. They don't necessarily want to download it. They want to see it live. So there is a bit of a salvation with sports coverage that is going to be more relevant, whether it's Sunday football or Thursday football or whatever is next on the horizon.
It just means you have to build an apartment complex right next door to the studio. Which,
that's right. That's exactly right.
Jude LaCava with us. So what did you think of the other night, by the way, at soccer? Because you have World Cup coming up on Fox. What did you think of Rising FC?
I was really impressed with my conversations with Bill Dooley and many of the others there. I think that when you look at, and you know the impact of advertising today, when you look at the younger demographic, and I'm talking about young families, youngsters, 18 to 35, this is a home run waiting to happen. And I think, you know, from where they were a few years ago to where they are now and the impact of their ownership group, it's impressive, very impressive. And if you look at, as I've learned from you, Brad, the comparison of the marketplaces that are vying for MLS franchises, this is a home run waiting to happen. Mm-hmm. I mean, especially when you look at the Hispanic market, when you look at the boom market of Phoenix, Arizona, I can't believe that the MLS would not strongly consider Phoenix Rising as an option. So I think there's a lot of positives. I think you're ahead of the curve and you ID'd that as far as the strength and depth of this ownership group. I think people should be excited. And, you know, look, the downside right now is that we don't have a team in the World Cup, which is still astounding to me. I mean, 32 countries and we can't crack the 32. Right. That's disappointing. And, of course, you could say the same thing for Italy. But it's coming and they'll get it right. And I think that when you look at success stories in Seattle and Portland around the country, this would be a perfect market for an MLS team.
All right. That's well put. Let's bounce around here. You are Ryan McDonough. What do you do with the number one overall pick with the Suns?
I think there's tremendous pressure with a number one pick after 50 years of waiting to take a franchise center, as much as the game has changed. You know, you can look at Luka Doncic, and I really like his game, and I think this kid's going to eventually be an NBA All-Star. But I think the connect the dots between going south on I-10 to Tucson and looking at DeAndre Ayton and Robert Sarver's connection there, I don't think they can pass up DeAndre Ayton. He's a offensively skilled center that can do a lot. He reminds me more of David Robinson. Again, potentially. He's only 19, so let's not get too far ahead of ourselves. However, defensively, he's got a long, long way to go. But he has the skills to learn, and that's where Igor can come in. So I can't believe that this organization would pass on DeAndre Ayton. If they were to pass on him, I think there would be an outrage because he is the perceived number one overall selection. So I think they're almost going to have to be backed in a corner on this, and I see them taking Ayton.
Yeah, but you just answered your own question on this. You can't see them being backed into a corner, but we're talking about Robert. And you and I are both on the same page on that whole deal of how what an embarrassment this has become. I kind of feel like the paralysis by analysis, I wish the draft were tomorrow because I think these guys have the potential to screw it up. If you're going to consider going and getting Karl-Anthony Towns because he's already proven it, Karl-Anthony Towns isn't happy. I don't want a player who's already going the diva route. It doesn't matter to me that he played with Tyler Ulis or Devin Booker. That stuff is irrelevant. The mere fact that Ryan hasn't just said, this is the guy that we're going to go get, anybody who says that that's smart strategy in this day and age, it just leaves open the shadow of doubt, or not even shadow, the big curtain of doubt around this organization, the way it's been run, at least from my view.
Yeah, I can agree with you more. I think if you want to exchange 8 years of misery and horrible play to finally get a first-round top pick, top selection, I would say, sorry, I'll take the Colangelo era. I'll take a consistent contender. I'll take a team that's fun to watch and exciting every time. I think it's been an unbelievable drought, and I do blame Robert Sarver. I think Ryan McDonough should be moved to scouting director, and I think Robert Sarver should go get Dave Griffin.
Yep,
Griff is the kind of guy that can pick up a phone, call another GM, and add some veterans. Now, having said that, James Jones is respected.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see what he can do when it comes to free agents. But this has been a miserable 8-year stretch, the worst in the history of the franchise on their 50th anniversary year. So I agree with you, Brad. I think it's an embarrassment. I think the fan base has been tested like no other time in its history, and it's very unfortunate. And there's still more issues to come, especially when it comes to either renovation or the whole arena issue that is not going away in the next few years.
No, I think even more so, Jude, that Robert, what's going on with the Vegas Knights indirectly impacts what's going on here in Phoenix, in my view, because it's only going to accelerate the idea of, well, let's go get baseball and get it here to Vegas, or let's go get the NBA and get it here to Vegas. And both the teams down here aren't happy with their current building situations. You know, am I reading too much into this? Do you see it the same? Where are you at on that?
I think the Diamondbacks are extremely vulnerable over the next 4 to 5 years. I think that there's no easy answer for Chase Field, and I don't necessarily believe that the Tribes are going to step in there and bail everybody out.
Mm-hmm.
This is a critical issue. So let's just say theoretically it's easier to build an arena or a stadium. Look at the Raiders, look at Las Vegas, the Golden Knights, and say, hey, we're going to give you over $1 billion for this team. I'm not an alarmist, but the Diamondbacks are vulnerable over the next 4 or 5 years. The thing that bothers me most is that I would have loved to have seen this lease sustained to 2027. That gives us a good 9-10 years to look at different options. Now, can the governor sit there and say, with sports gambling eventually coming to Arizona, we're going to create a stadium fund that we will set aside money over time that can create funds for renovation or additional stadiums? That's an interesting idea. However, there's heavier priorities in this state, and we know that, whether it be education, whether it be pension funds, whether it be infrastructure. So he's got a real problem on his hands. Where does this money come from to renovate Chase Field? Where does this money come from if Ken Kendrick says, hey, I need a new stadium? The downside of this, what really bothers me most, though, Brad, is this, is that really 25 years, and you're saying you're outdated, you're antiquated?
Yeah.
I mean, is this a top priority? Hey, maybe it's not the most aesthetically perfect situation. Now, I will tell you this, the air conditioning unit has been pushed to the hilt, and that could have broken down last year. So they do need some maintenance and renovation. But where is this money going to come from? And that creates vulnerability, especially for the Arizona Diamondbacks.
Well, you have the gambling side. You also have the legalization of marijuana. You look at those two as revenue streams, but you're going to have the Red for Ed movement, as you alluded to. And people just don't want to see money go to sports owners. We're just at that point. If they tried to build a stadium the way that Chase or Bank One Ballpark was built, you and I both went through that. We both know it wouldn't happen in this day and age.
Absolutely.
Who gets the burden of the Diamondbacks' struggles from your point of view? Where's the burden fall on this?
I think the burden with this winning of the lawsuit falls on Ken Kendrick. And what decision will he make, and how committed is he to Phoenix, Arizona?
Mm-hmm.
That's the biggest thing I would say. And I would love to sit down with Ken and say, look, tell me where your long-term intentions are at. Because what if you can't raise enough revenue with this new deal to renovate what you need here or look at another facility? It clearly falls on Ken Kendrick. I think the county has washed their hands of it. Although, let's not forget demolition costs if that stadium would have to come down in 5-8 years and all the cleanup that goes with it. That's costly in and of itself. But it clearly falls on the commitment of the owner to the city, to the marketplace.
A couple of the questions.
And that's where...
Oh, go ahead, Jude.
Yeah, that's my biggest issue.
Yeah, sorry to jump in there on you. Jude LaCava with us, Fox 10 Sports Director. Before I let you go, a couple other things. The burden of the Diamondbacks' struggles on the field. Who does it fall on the field?
Well, you know, Mike Hazen has been a guy that did a really nice job last year. I think my question is, on the outside looking in, is this. About last August to September, Paul Goldschmidt went into this tailspin. J.D. Martinez was having a remarkable year. There's a baseball tutor by the name of Craig Wollenbrock, and this really hasn't come out. I don't know how much of an impact, because I know J.D. Martinez strongly suggested to Paul, let's get you some tutoring here with Wollenbrock. Mm. Is there too much information coming by way of some of these baseball tutors, and is that confusing the issue? Because I've never seen a guy who is a true student of the game, a guy that works so hard, just really struggle so much the first 6-7 weeks of the season. I never expected this. Sometimes I wonder if it's information overload. Sometimes I wonder if this organization outsmarted themselves with the humidor, because some of those home runs that I've seen Paul hit, I should say, would be home runs to the warning track, would have been out last year. So did this organization, with the exit of J.D. Martinez, outsmart themselves with the humidor to where it's starting to get into the heads of some of their players? This batting average is atrocious.
Yep. Last night's lineup was nothing. Their lineup last night was
three hits.
Yeah, and the look at the batting average of each one of the guys that started last night. There was nothing there.
Yeah, it's there has to be a deeper issue here, and I'm wondering if it is. Obviously, confidence can go quickly. As difficult as this game is to play, but I really worry about the overload of information, assimilating this information. The launch angles, it worked for AJ, but I don't, you know, it's like a golf swing. It is so specific to that particular golfer. Same thing is true in hitting a baseball. What works for J.D. Martinez may not work for Paul Goldschmidt. Will they be aggressive, Brad? Here's the question. Will they be aggressive with trying to shake up the lineup or maybe even deal?
Yeah,
they've got to do something. You know, they all that goodwill, that great start, is evaporated.
It's gone.
This is Mike Hazen's real first challenge as GM, along with Torrey Lovello. Now, Torrey's kept his poise, and I'm extremely impressed with him. But what do they do with this rotation when a guy like Greinke gives up 3 homers and can't win a game in Milwaukee? So that's your ace. You got some issues here, and they've got to figure out a way to fix this over the next few weeks.
About a minute and a half left in the segment, and this is kind of a delicate question, but I think it's one that we have to start having the discussion on. That's Senator McCain. So you and I have known Senator McCain for a long, long time. He has been involved in sports on many, many levels. When I start seeing family members say we're going to see him on the other side and the HBO series Memoirs comes out this weekend, it doesn't sound good. It doesn't look good for his health. Jude, from a sporting standpoint, what has Senator McCain done in this state?
He has been a guy that's the number one fan. I have tremendous respect for his commitment to this state, his passion, and what he's been. He loves sports. He was very involved in boxing and some of the UFC issues years ago. I just wish people would step back and just have a very compassionate sense of what John and his family are going through when it comes to battling such a horrible disease. Mm-hmm. And I hope that as this plays out, and I think we all know where it may be going, that people just realize how he dedicated his life to public service, his military service, and it will not be red versus blue. It will be American hero and a guy who dedicated his life to this state like no other, a true legend, and just realize that when cancer hits a family, and I know what that's like, having lost my mom as a teenager years ago, many years ago, it's devastating. It forces you to think about your own mortality. And I just hope that those that are divided politically become united in understanding the dedication he gave this state for many, many decades.
Yeah, it's nasty what's going on back in D.C. I mean, there's stuff that's just sickening. And I think of the times that in covering the Suns where Senator McCain would be at games and we would have interesting conversations about this player and that player. Always a fan, even when the camera was turned off. And I don't mean this in disrespect. It just doesn't look good where this is going. And it's going, it seems, in a hurry. As always, I appreciate your time and your insight. Thank you.
You got it, Brad. And we'll keep an eye on what happens here with Senator McCain. And always good to talk to you.
You too. There's Jude LaCava with us. Always good to catch up with Jude. We take a break. Back after this timeout, sports360az.com. We partner with the Arizona Republic, AZ Central Sports. I'm Brad Sussmat. So we are in somewhat of the silly season in football, in pro football in particular. The silly season is making a big deal out of players not showing up at OTAs, filling shows, filling hours and hours of paper and online with, oh my gosh, I cannot believe that Tom Brady and Rob Gronkowski are not at OTAs. This is going to be the end of the world. They're not going to win. I can't believe that Aaron Donald is not on the field at OTAs with the Rams. Oh my gosh, this means they're not going to win this year. Same with Earl Thomas. Oh, Seattle's not going to be anything because Earl Thomas isn't at OTAs in May. Ryan Tannehill, the front page of the Miami Herald, it's a picture of Ryan Tannehill without wearing a knee brace. Big blaring headline, yet another encouraging sign in Ryan Tannehill's recovery for knee surgery. He's not wearing a brace. It's May. There's times where I think, and I've talked to athletes about this, where the NFL just goes way over the top and trying to remind everybody year-round that they are the 800-pound gorilla when they're better off just focusing on their league meetings, which are this week, some of their rules changes that they do, the awarding of the Super Bowl tomorrow to Arizona and to New Orleans. If I sound a little trite about the Super Bowl coming here, we talked about it yesterday, and yeah, it's great. It's great that Michael's able to get in, the group's able to get another Super Bowl back here. Not downplaying that. But this whole nonsense of May of overreaction May of this player's not showing up. These guys are going to roll through. They understand that this is a waste of time. You can find a guy who's getting $30 million in a signing bonus, and it's not going to be that much. I'm going to pay the fine, and I'm going to go work with my personal trainer, and that's the way it is. So I'm just more than amused that today has become this, my gosh, what is going to happen in New England this year because Tom and Rob aren't in camp. Now, when it comes to the Cardinals, a close-up shot of the knees of Sam Bradford is probably the shot that you want to see. If Sam has a small brace on, is that a great thing? If Sam has no brace on, it's going to be made a big deal out of. Just breathe a little bit on this stuff, and let's not do the paralysis by analysis. Another spot in sports that is interesting to me. So Rick Neuheisel was hired this week. Last Friday, to run the Alliance football team that's going to be here in the Valley. We have had Rick on this show many times. Rick is a former McClintock High School guy. He's now back here in the Valley. He's tied in now in a roundabout way with Arizona State. If Herm Edwards doesn't work out or if Herm Edwards retires, Rick Neuheisel is already sitting here in Tempe. And if you don't think that's a possibility, then I don't think you're really looking at the big picture of where sports is. Rick, though, on his show last week, brought up a very interesting point. I wrote this down, and that is getting college football to be on an equal playing field when it comes to scheduling. His point is we have these worthless games or semi-worthless games. There's scrimmages early in the season. And in the SEC, they totally take advantage by Arkansas only having 8 conference games this year while the other teams have 9. How does that happen? When it's the third week in November, before their big showdown games, they're playing Furman. The people that are the SEC lovers and defenders say, well, without the Alabama-Furman game, Furman doesn't get a new weight room. Well, couldn't you just collectively put all the conferences together and they spread the money out and you don't have these glorified scrimmages and that's all they are in late November? And it should in this day and age of having a playoff, they should not have these cakewalk games to get set up in late November. I've subscribed to this. I've talked about this on the air. So a solution to that is this. And this, again, was Rick's idea, and I totally buy into it. And, Eric, you can jump in on this one, too. His suggestion is look at what college basketball is doing in November and December when you have the SEC Big Ten Challenge or the ACC Challenge against the Big Ten, whatever it is. Have it be in college football. In week number one, you have the Pac-12 playing the Big 12.
It's a great idea.
Week number two, you have the SEC playing the ACC.
Logistically, it's a little bit more difficult to schedule those types of things because college football schedules are made
years in advance,
7, 10, 20 years in advance.
Is there enough money to buy out contracts and get rid of these minor schools?
Of course. Yeah, yes. They print money in the NCAA and college athletics.
But could you imagine an opening week? And Rick went right down the list. He actually went through so much detail. And so I was going to send him a text and say, send this over to me because I want to run this by people. He went right down the list of Big 12, Pac-12, and I believe he had ASU playing Iowa State and U of A playing Oklahoma State.
Yeah, those are great. Those are great non-conference games.
And rather than,
and I'm sure Iowa State, who has come into Arizona and planted a nice Iowa State Cyclone flag in several different parts of the valley, would love to come play ASU or have ASU come play Iowa State in Ames.
Okay, so let me jump back on what you just brought up. So last night we're at the Violin, and I've got Preston Jones with Jason. Jason and I are talking to Preston Jones, head coach at Perry.
Yep.
Perry is going to be very good this year. Their quarterback, DeShane James, is already committed to Iowa State, correct? Correct. Brock Purdy is already going to there. He said that there were 7 Iowa State coaches in his office at one time during this last recruiting period.
It's incredible.
7 coaches showed up at one high school from the Big 12. From the same school. 7 assistant coaches from Iowa State were at Perry at the same time. And so if you had those types of games versus, and look, I think ASU this year playing against Michigan State's what I want to see. San Diego State, it's an easy travel trip. I get it. Not the greatest matchup, although San Diego State's good. They could beat ASU.
Well, they beat them last year.
But nationally, I'm talking more nationally, if you're in the Power 5 and you're in the playoff,
right,
then along with your conference, have, like they've done in college basketball, use the model. It's the ACC Big Ten Challenge. It's the Pac-12 ACC Challenge. And rotate it through every year. If one year it's ASU playing Florida State, I'd love to see that.
Oh, I'm down. Who would want to see that?
If it's ASU and that one year they've got to play Vanderbilt, people are going to say, well, they got lucky. But that's the way it works out. But at least you're doing something conference to conference.
But ASU would want the big fish. They wouldn't want to host Vanderbilt. They would want to host Georgia.
Correct. Okay. So you'd also have TV weighing in on this saying, we want USC Georgia in prime time because we want the Southeast market of Atlanta and we want the television market of LA.
Yep.
So once again, because they're in the Pac-12, they're going to get the short end of the stick. NFL Spring League meetings are in Atlanta, by the way. And so there's all sorts of stuff around the National Football League and on the football front. Back with more after this timeout. So tonight, you have the second-place Diamondbacks. They're not the first-place Diamondbacks anymore. They're a half game back of Colorado. Who thought and saw this coming even just 3 weeks ago? Nobody. And you have Golden State against Houston tonight. That game, by the way, tips off at 6 o'clock. I'm helping you out with your planning. 6 o'clock on TNT. I mentioned earlier about the amount of three-pointers being shot in the NBA and that Houston shot 3,473 three-pointers this season during the regular campaign. The three-point shooting, Kevin Durant was talking about this yesterday, that the three-point shooting in the last 2 years, if you go look at the numbers, it's what has changed the game of basketball and has made this Western Conference playoff series, quite frankly, not that competitive. Every game has had an average margin of victory of 25 points. If you're the team that is hitting the threes, like Golden State has done so far in this series, you're the team that's winning. Houston, the one game that they won, they drill it from downtown. The other side of this story, so back on this, it's three-point barrages plus poor defense equals blowouts. That's what we're looking at here. The other side of this series is Steph Curry. I'm a fan of Steph Curry. Who's not a fan of Steph Curry? Anybody who hates on Steph Curry is, I don't know, I don't see it. But Steph Curry has developed this interesting little niche for himself. If he doesn't play well, it's because he's injured. That narrative has been pushed out there. If he does play well, it's because he's Steph Curry. So there's nobody banging on him, unlike James Harden. James Harden is just getting ripped nationally for A, not playing defense. Put James Harden on Kevin Durant, and it's no contest. Harden is getting crushed while Curry's in this bubble of, well, he's not at 100%, so, you know, he can't really move laterally. He really can't do this, really do that. It's finding people that want to nitpick at his game. And I'm not one of those, but I think it's interesting how he's kind of sealed himself off. People will look at Golden State, and I love watching a 6'11 guy like Kevin Durant play a point guard position. I just love it. I think it's so impressive and so entertaining. They may not have Iguodala tonight. And Curry, if I'm to believe, I'm one of those that is skeptical whenever it comes to injury reports because teams like to hide stuff. I've just seen it happen too much through the years. But if Golden State doesn't play well tonight and Harden has 41 and Curry goes 5 of 15, it's going to be because he's hurt. If Curry goes out and he scores a ton of points, it's not because he's hurt. It's just because he's Steph bleeping Curry. That's what's going on here. So it's an interesting side from my view to see how that plays out. A couple of college things before we get out of here and wrap it up. The Colangelo Classic, we talked about this a bit yesterday, but it is worth repeating. For Jerry to start getting involved in this, and this is the Basketball Hall of Fame that is putting this together, too, with Jerry. Jerry still wants to put the Basketball Hall of Fame here. He still wants to do that, have a basketball training center, I should say, not the Hall of Fame, basketball training center, U.S. Olympic Training Center. He is looking at this facility in the north part of the valley that has been pushed out there quietly, privately. I've talked a lot about what's going on in Mesa. I'm hearing Jerry's looking at the north part of the valley to maybe put something together. It was supposed to be in downtown Tempe at the corner of Millen University, and it fell apart, unfortunately. I think it would have been great down there. But to have this classic year after year from now on, this year it's Gonzaga, Tennessee, and St. Mary's GCU on December 9th. Three teams in the West Coast, or Nevada, I should say. GCU, Nevada. To look at those... three of those teams being out here in the West. Just remember that when conference affiliation time comes around. GCU is looking around. There's no question. And a 7'4" center in the state of Seattle committed to Mike Hopkins and UW, Riley Sorn, chose UW over St. Mary's. I bring this up because whenever there's a kid that's 7 feet something, people have a curiosity factor. Mike Hopkins is doing a great job up there. His name has already been mentioned. It bowled out of Washington and become a national brand sometime soon. But just keep an eye on that for the coming year. Again tonight, Diamondbacks trying to get out of the second place spot and get out of their doldrums, and Golden State against Houston. Jared Nielsen's our chairman of the board. He didn't screw up. Eric Sorensen never screws up. He's the senior executive vice president of nothing or everything, depending on the day. Jordan Hamm, Haley Stasiak. Enjoy your Tuesday.